start with the meeting. We will start firstly with the introduction. My name is Mandla Chaim, chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. Morning, Minister. Morning, Deputy Minister. Morning, colleagues. My name is Kusum Zimakoyo. I'm the member from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jacques Lund, and I'm a member here from the Western Cape.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Everybody, my name is Willem Faber, and I represent the Northern Cape province. Thank you.
I'm Eddie Makuwa. I'm from the province of Taupo.
Good morning, Chairman. Members. My name is Patrick Lodomita. Okay.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, my name is Mildred Elton. I'm currently deployed as the Minister of State. Thank you.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Sam Rodova, the Secretary of State General for Public Planning Services, and today I'm leading the delegation of the Minister of Opposition.
Morning, honorable members and everyone. My name is Eki Bunga, Deputy DG for the Public Planning Services.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Dr. Matthew, I'm the DG Corporate Services.
Good morning, my name is Greg Chamberlain. I'm from the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Lumka Nandango, Chief of the Office of the Supported Employment Enterprise on the Department of State. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. Minister, my name is Virgil Seacroft. I'm the Deputy Director General for Labour Policy and Industrial Relations in the Department.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Marie Collins Katie. I'm the head of the Director General Office.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Peggy Matona, CFO of the Department of Labour.
Thank you very much. We have apologies from Honourable Nihal, the member of the committee, and also House Chairperson. Responsible for international relations. Another apology is that of the minister is going to be here for a few minutes. She's attending another meeting. The honorable TM will be leading the delegation. We'll hand over to you.
Thank you very much, everything. Well, essentially, we are here on an invitation from the Select Committee to talk about our strategic plan and the annual strategic plan for the Naturally, we expect that as we talk about our plan, these are essentially about what we're going to do. We'll be asking some questions later on. How far are we in relation to what we're going to do? What is planned? Because we are informed by what has been happening in the plan for the past financial year. Therefore, I imagine the department is well represented to be able to make the necessary presentation and be here until the end of the process to make sure that if there are questions
you, Honorable Chesterton and the Minister and the Minister. We are going to be presenting the annual performance plan of the department for 2018-19, which was tabled early this year around March. The plan essentially outlined what is it that we are going to do during the 18-19 financial year. In the presentation, I will cover briefly what the department structures like in terms of entities, the medium term strategic framework which we are part of, the government plan, and how we in the department fit into the strategic plan of government, and then quickly move into the annual performance plan of the department. The annual performance of the department covers the supported systemic enterprise as well, because they are not a standalone entity. The APP does not go into detail in terms of the individual entities of the department as they have separate annual performance plan. So in the presentation, in the main, I will talk to 1 up to 4 and the UIF and the compensation fund, not in the presentation. And the CFO will also then cover the funding that are allocated to us. The other entities, apart from the two, the unemployment insurance fund and the compensation fund, are the CCMA, the National Economic Development and Labour Council, and Left Productive South African Supported Economic Enterprise, that are still part of this project. However, the threat plan and the NGT outline how they see, but as per the directive of the EPM, that is the Department of Public Enterprise, we don't implement that in our plan. Now, government operates on 14 very broad outcomes that are used as a basis for coordinating all our work across the department. And what we have been requested or asked to do is that our plan should clearly indicate in which of the 14 outcomes are we going to contribute, and this forms the basis of the Minister's Performance Agreement and the Deputy Minister's Performance Agreement with the President. And we contribute towards outcome 4, outcome 5, outcome 11, outcome 12, and outcome 13 and 14. And in the next slide, I'm going to demonstrate how the current ranges link to those outcomes. Outcome 4 on decent employment through economic growth, the inspection and enforcement services, labor policy, and industrial relations and public employment services contribute towards that outcome based on the goal statement that you see. On outcome 5, a skilled and capable workforce to support the growth plan. This is led by Department of Higher Education, but from the Department public employment services form part of that, and we are those classes as well. Outcome 11 on creating a better South Africa, labor policy and industrial relations form part of that. Outcome 12 is mainly administration, because it's about efficient and effective governance, and social protection, mainly unemployment insurance funds and compensation funds. And lastly, transforming society and transformation, where inspection and enforcement and labor policy is the main contributor. And all the initiatives are then clustered. And our minister is part of the cabinet committee that brings all those clusters together. Now, the next slide is just giving you the detail in terms of where we operate. We have in the threat plan, we have administration, which is just in the main contributing to us leveraging the MPET. The MPET is the monitoring tool that is used by the Department of Public Service and Administration in the office of the Minister of Service to look at how well we are implementing our work. And normally what we have in every objective, we have a baseline which basically gives you an indication of where we were in the 16-17 and currently we are in the 17-18 financial year where
recommended code of practice on planning disability that was conducted by the 6th of September 2016. And the 5-year target is that at least 40% of middle and senior management are applicants by 2019-2020. On slide 21, establishing the standards and minimum wages. Our baseline was that the question of quality workers and contract union workers, sexual discrimination, that we pursue in 2017. And we're hoping that by at the end of the 5-year period, 95% gap in the minimum wage calculation would have covered and hence the initiative around the new legislation on minimum wage. On advancing national priorities through bilateral relations, like 22, baseline was in 2017 was that 1 in 10 an annual implementation report that submitted. And the 5-year target is that we aim to have 8 MOUs signed and implemented. On slide 23, on promoting staff labor relations, our baseline has to do with 1% of collective agreements extended, 15 extended within 90 days, and 10 extended in longer than 90 days, and 96% of applications for registration finalized within 90 days. Apologies for that, we were intending to have in the 5-year target, we would have developed a program to address workplace conflict through improved communication, career mobility, skills development, finance, workplaces. On slide number 24, which is about monitoring the impact of labor legislation, the baseline by 30 June was that 2 annual labor market trends reports have been produced, and that 2 research reports would have been produced and submitted by 31st March. And the 5-year target is that 20 annual labor market trends and 8 final research reports would have been. Then I'll go straight to slide number 28 on the annual performance plan for 2018-19. In administration, the indicator talks to contribution to best governance and management practices in the department. And our target for the year is that 45% of the department's MPET standards KPI at level 3 and 4 are achieved by March 2019. The key performance indicators levels are set by the department for performance and monitoring, and the more you comply with them, the more reassurance we are giving in terms of our governance
terms of communication on light green land, effective communication, our target is to have communication annual plan approved, and we have a breakdown in terms of what it is that we are going to do on each quarter. And the third one, falling also under administration, is the financial and supply chain management. And there are two performance indicators. The first one talks to the number of annual financial statements compiled in line with the guidelines issued by Treasury, and the target for the year 1 AM by 31st in May, and the quarterly targets are also outlined there. On cases of irregular and wasteful expenditure, unauthorized expenditure detected and reported to the accounting officer, our target is to have all cases because there we can't make provision for any case that should be reported, not to be reported. And then if I can move on to the program two, inspection and enforcement. On inspection and enforcement, the indicator talks to the number of employers inspected per year to determine compliance with employment laws. And the target for the year is 218,000, and the quarterly targets are broken in that order. And what we have also done for the select committee, because we know that these matters are of interest to ourselves in terms of the geographical location. So you notice that the Eastern Cape has an annual target of 21,000, and their contribution per quarter is also outlined. The three states, 18,000, 18.5, Gauteng, 18.2. And 44,000, Limpopo 19,000, Mpumalanga 15,000, Northern Cape 8.9, Northwest 14.6, Western Cape 1.8, and the head office at 220. That gives us the total of the target. And what we normally do in terms is that the province and the target has to do with a number of things that we follow in government. Firstly, the population density, the industrial density. The budget is also allocated on those terms to different provinces. And in terms of province, then we allocate the budget to labor centers that actually carry out breakdown under each province. In Eastern Cape, they've got 16 offices. Their report will then indicate what an office in East London and the office in Tartan is going to contribute towards the Eastern Cape total figure. The next one on inspection enforcement, 1.2, site 33, is the percentage of non-compliant employers. Inspected that we are going to serve notices, and our target is 80%, and that's broken into four quarters. Percentage of non-compliant employers who fail to comply with the serve notice request for prosecution, we're targeting 60%, and the breakdown in quarters is also outlined. On the percentage of reported incidents investigated and finalized within the prescribed time frame, we're targeting 65%, and the quarter is set by our plan. On public employment services, the number of work opportunities are also indicated there. And in terms of the number of of policies have registered on the SAP year, targeting 650,000, and the quarterly figures are outlined. And again, and we've done it with each line. In the Eastern Cape, in the 78,000, to say 45,000, and Western Cape, 84,500. And again, we have detailed information on the contribution of each office. On 2.1, on the learning opportunities registered on ESA, the target is 85,000, and we have a breakdown of the contribution by individual offices. On the number of registered workers provided with employment counseling by 87, again we have the counseling target of 200,000 and a breakdown in terms of the individual provincial office contribution. On the number of registered workers filled, that is opportunity filled with registered opportunities, the figure was increased by almost 400%, and that was because of the number of efficiency improvements that have been initiated, and also the agreements that were signed with, or entered into with different projects to recruit from ESA. And this year, we targeted 42,500, and we have a breakdown in terms of quarter. And again, the contribution of each provincial office outlined. If I can go to labor relations, slide number 40. The performance indicators of the number of instruments developed and promoted to enhance implementation of the Employment Act by March 31st. 2019, and the target is that the 2017-18 annual employment report and published by 30th target is to make sure that four annual market trends report are produced by March 2019. And again, we indicate what we're going to do in the first and last quarter of the financial year. On slide number 46, we deal with the number of fed costs on labor market that produced and submitted to the region. And the target is to have all such reports produced, and we also indicate what is that we are going to do in quarter one, right up to quarter four, when we finalize the fourth stage. And the next two slides cover the supported employment enterprise, which is also part of the department at this stage. And in terms of the APP, they have two indicators. One talks to the number of additional persons with disabilities provided with web opportunities in the FDE by end of March 2019. And they are targeting over and above what they currently employ to increase that number by 100. And obviously, this depends on securing contracts and so on. But this is the target that the entity has set itself, that every quarter they will increase the establishment by 25 new people or additional people that have certain disabilities as defined in terms of the Act and in line with the United Nations Convention. On the next one, due to the percentage of annual increase of sales revenue from goods and services, and they intend to increase their revenue by 10%, and the target also per quarter is very outlined. That concludes the presentation of the APP. I must also say, honorable members, that over and above the annual performance plan, and if honorable members were to look at the legislation that we administer, we have work plans that are also extended to individuals within the organization, and those form the basis of their performance agreement. And what we presented is the high-level annual performance plan that we are normally measured on at strategic level. And I will then request the CFO to then the financial of the department.
In terms of the division of division of revenue Act 2018-19, the Department of Labor is vote number 28. And in the next slide, as this has been mentioned, the department has got four programs for divisions of the vote, which is administration, IES, Public Employment Services, and Labor Policy and Industrial Relations. For the 2018-19, the allocation per main divisions of the board amounts to 3.2 billion rand, and for the outer years, which is 2019-2020 is 3.4 billion, and for the 2020 to 2021, 3.6 billion.
billion rand. The allocations that have indicated include the public entities that have funded through the vote. In administration, there's none. In IEF, there's no public entity that is included in that vote. However, in public employment services, productivity, the budget for IEF, for public employment services, includes Productivity South Africa, supported employment enterprises, and partly for the compensation fund. However, we have kept the unemployment insurance fund open so that should there be a need for funding for UIF, there is a conduit to direct the funding. That's why I think that one is kept at 1,000, just 1 rand or 1,000 rand, so that should there be a need for Inca to fund your IF, we do have a conduit to do that. LPA and IR also, their budget includes CCMA and NEDLAC. We further classify our budget into economic classification, which is current payments, transfers and subsidies, payment for capital assets, and payment for financial assets. There is a page that indicates under current employment, under current payment, what it includes, transfers and subsidies, payment for capital assets and for payment for financial assets. I will just go straight to the figures in terms of our budget as classified in terms of economic classification. Under current payments, we've got 1.9 billion transfers and subsidies, where the transfers to public entities, the ones that I've mentioned, is included. We've got 1.2 billion. And for payment for capital assets, it was 75 million. And the total, that is the total vote of 3.2. The same amount as in the amount for the main divisions of the vote. That also, we also put the same amount, well, the same classification throughout the outliers, which is 3.4 billion and 3.6. We also touch on the audit outcomes that we have achieved to indicate that over the past 5 financial years, the Department of Labor has, in respect of regularity audit, received an audit outcome which has been unqualified with some significant findings. The department continues to face challenges in the areas of contract management and leave management. What areas do we see that on a decentralized basis throughout the department, and they are receiving attention in line with the action plan that we took at time to address the challenges that we face. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and set up established. And
how does the members that are going to attend, I will appeal that if they can firstly attend the committee, particularly the committee of standards, because that's the committee that deals with the convention that the country has ratified, and also to see whether after ratification that there is legislation that has been done by that particular country and the implementation thereof. So there are countries that appear before the Committee of Standards because they have failed to comply with the implementation of those particular standards. And also, I just want to say, South Africa will participate in SADC and ARLAC, BRICS, G20, and ILO. And we have hosted SADC here in the Western Cape early in March. And we will also be hosting BRICS around July here in South Africa. But the G20 will be hosted by Argentina. And ARLAC usually, they used to host it either in Namibia because that is the head office of ARLAC. And in Zimbabwe, yes. And we have been approached by the ILO as SADC to host the training center for SADC countries, particularly that deals with the labor issue. But I think I also want to inform the committee that the president has been invited to co-chair the Global Commission on the Future of Work. And the reason we're being that South Africa, we are the first country to ratify and come up with the legislation and implement those legislation. So they have asked us to lead on that one. But already has been also invited to address the IOC next year, because ILO will be celebrating its centenary since its establishment. I must also say, Chair, during SADC, all the members of the portfolio committee attended. And what we usually do as a department, particularly the ministry, we send an invitation to the presiding officer to say, can we have a delegation from Parliament? And in that SADC summit, SADC has agreed that probably there is a missing link for members of parliament to attend, and they have encouraged even other countries to say it would be better if members of parliament can participate, even if it's just one day, so that they can be also informed as different ministries on how they should deal with the issue. On the issue of the national minimum wage, I assume there will be a question why we have not implemented the national minimum wage as agreed at NEDLAC. The intention was to implement it on the 1st of May, but we said it will be implemented depending the finalization of the legislation. And since the legislation is not yet finalized by Parliament, we can't implement it. And also the delay started at NEDLAC itself because the constituencies were unable to finalize the legislation within the framework that was given to them. It was finalized by the constituencies at the end of October, and the report was adopted, NEDLAC report was adopted in the first week of November. And then from then it went to cabinet,
delays on prosecution for those who are non-compliant, because the prosecuting authority also they have to do their own investigations before they finalize the cases that are referred to them. So those are the few things that I wanted to add, Chairperson, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister, dear, and the acting DG. I'm a bit feverish. Actually, our book of for the whole week, but I didn't want one of the father to chair this meeting, so I decided to come.
Because what you think will be in summer?
Yeah, even though I'm not that booked off. I was thinking that sometimes the opposition will have numbers here and they elect their own person to chair. So I decided to come. even tomorrow meeting with the Department of Public Works, I'll be forced to come to prevent the farmer from telling. Thank you very much. I'll just allow members the person with your permission, Minister, if you know, to I'll just start on the issues that you bring, international issues, as well as the processes regarding the national minimum wage for your leave. If there are any questions on those that you've reported on, and then after that, then we can deal with the report as tabled by the FTDG. Just to clarify on the issue of the IMO, we have both been aware that invitations are sent to both the National Assembly Speaker and the NCOP, the National Chairperson. We normally wait for her to inform us of the process. And that last year, no one was part of the delegation last year because they were not made aware, even though we knew. But this time we decided to take the initiative of we approached the House Chairperson and the Chief Whip. So the process is now awaiting the signature of the Chairperson, who has been away for the past 2 weeks as part of the Pan African Parliament. Then today is Thursday. So we hope that one of the documents that she will be signing will include this one on IMO. I know with regard to the National Minimum Wage, the Portfolio Committee finalized the report last week. So yesterday it was 86. We are in the process now of issuing up advert. We're targeting the weekend. It will run for 2 weeks, but we will deal with the program as to when we'll have the public submissions and public hearings. And also, but it doesn't seem like we're able to deal with it completely during this second term of the program. But we'll definitely, I'm sure about the third term after we come back from the July recess. I mean, continuing the period. Unfortunately, won't be able before the end of June because of the time take settlement process. But as I'm saying, that our target for now, we're not even going to wait for the House to have the National Assembly to adopt it. Because it has ATC, so we know what it has been completed in the NPA. We will therefore advertise it with those amendments from the NPA and then take the process forward. Members, I'll allow you to, for now, just ask questions on the issues that the minister raised, and thereafter, then we, so that we allow him to respond to those, and then after. Concluding with the responses, we then ask questions to the acting DG and the team. Thank you. But if there's nothing, if you want information, it's fine. Okay. Minister, I think it was information, so it's clear. Thank you very much. We can start now asking questions on the APP and the budget as presented. Let me start the Honorable Baba, Honorable Makwebu, Honorable Makue, Honorable Dikhali. We tabled your apology form, and let me also welcome the meeting, also welcome Honorable Vauda and the Honorable Matimula. And Honorable Mteto, you're also on the list of the can you start, so let me start with you, Honorable Khaled, because you are right at the back. Honorable Baba, stop harassing Honorable
Khaled. Thanks for the protection, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody. And I'm happy that even if you didn't come today, Honorable Baba wouldn't get a chance to say because he arrived late.
No, I was not. You arrived late.
No, I have. That is welcoming you now. In the current financial year, the Department of Energy entities received a total of 3.295 billion for the current financial year. The budget allocation has increased by 75.8 million or 2.49% from 2017 to 2018 allocation in real terms. With the increased rate of mine accidents, which has resulted in loss of life in many mines, why did it take long for the Department of Labor to decide to amend the Occupational Health and Safety Act? My other question is that towards the end of 2016, the NCOP has, after receiving the recommendation of our committee, passed the Unemployment Insurance Amendment Bill, which supposed to expand access to social security. I want to know how they plan to monitor and evaluate the impact of this legislation on South African markets. The last one, Chair, how effective are the labor centers in provinces, especially in my province, Limpopo? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to welcome my honourable member behind me for eventually pitching for the meeting.
I must also tell you that the balance of forces has shifted now for the long time. You did not adopt the expropriation of land in our committee. So no longer your friend anymore now.
Chairperson, I just have three. Chairperson, thank you. Thank you for the department on the presentation. I do have a bit of a worry, and specifically on the corruption in the department itself. And there was a report of 116 frauds which has been registered but not investigated yet, which I would like to know about. Or 70 cases also now reported. Then there's 6.6 billion fraud involved in 12 cases that's been outstanding for longer than a year. Chairperson, I cannot see that for longer than a year these 12 cases are just been standing still, and I understand that some of them are even taking up to 4 years. Then there's also been 216 cases of misconduct, and 168 is still under investigation. And again, these cases are taking up to 4 years. Chairperson, I would like to know why this department is not taking swift action. People are staying in the department for years. Documents get lost, get misplaced, people get transferred, but eventually it's costing this government millions and millions of rand keeping people there that should not be there. I want to know what strategic action are they taking. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Department of Labour team. Just three things, Chairperson. One on inspection, secondly on the supported employment, as well as that is SE, as well as on the financials. On the issue of enforcement, the department knows very well you have challenges there of lack of resources. And this is causing a serious problem and it's got rippling effects. I'm saying this against the backdrop of the recent bus strike. As we are following the bus strike, it came to the fore that amongst the issues that remain unresolved that have been referred to now to what is called the task team, what they call the sticky issues. Amongst those issues is the issue of night shift allowance, the issue of dual drivers. And they have accused the Department of Labour saying these issues actually are issues of compliance and enforcement. And the Department of Labour just failed to enforce the basic conditions of employment. I want to hear you if that's a fair allegation. And if so, what do you intend to do to avoid the recurrence of the same? Because these strikes are not only costly, they are disruptive in the worst sense of the word. Having said that, if you look at the targets now on the very same issue of inspection and enforcement, you have put targets there. I'll use the Eastern Cape where I come from as an example. You have projected that you'll be doing 21,000 inspections. And one must remember that you still have this constraint of resources. And we have not heard you in your presentation saying how you plan to beef up your resources. Now, working within the limited resources, Chairperson, through you, it will help to know which sectors are you targeting in this financial year as you strategize, as you plan. Because you want to see which sectors are targeting to enforce and inspect. It is important that we know that because in other there are sectors that we deem vulnerable. They are vulnerable to exploitation. I'll make example of the farm workers, but we always say so. I would want more information on that target and unpack it quickly for us. Secondly, on the issue of the supported employment, the SBE. I see the target there is 100, but we want to know if you could help us share more information on that. What type of work are you planning to, you know, to create, and in which provinces perhaps, because I only see the total figure there. And I'm saying these things again against the backdrop of the unemployment rate that is escalating, particularly in my province. I need to go back to the constituencies and tell people what the department plans to do to alleviate their life. Unemployment, as you know, ladies and gentlemen, in the Eastern Cape is the highest province of unemployment, 35.5% escalating every day. It's shocking. Now, that's why I'm interested in this information, that unpack it quickly for us and see the benefits of this province in the FEE. Is 25 per quarter, 100 jobs to, 100 employment opportunities to be created. I want more information on that. Lastly, Chair, on the issue of financials, the department, by its own admission, they say they have challenges. Challenges that continue to face this department in areas of contract management and leave management. Now, I would want to know what is it that you are doing or that you plan to do, because it didn't come out from the presentation, except just threw the statement on the table and then you left it there. It doesn't help us. What is it that you plan to do to turn this situation around? What remedial action do you plan to put in place to correct these challenges? I mean, the issues of, at face value, the issues of contract management, the question is, do you have staff who are contract managers at the senior level? Leave management, I hear that it's decentralized, but again, what is it that you plan to do, despite that it is decentralized, which is good, what is it that you plan to do to make sure that this is corrected? I'm saying this because there's a lot of ways, but I would want to hear you doing that, because other departments, surely, they've never created this as a problem, because they've been innovative. Other developments are already moving on online applications for leave, just to make sure that when you're sitting at the head office, despite being decentralized, you can have a dashboard where you could see how provinces are capturing leave and how leave is being approved, and the records are up to date. Just one example, but I would want to hear from you, because you have left it just on the table, and you didn't tell us how you plan to correct those challenges. And I think that's important that we know as you plan and you strategize in this current financial year. Chairperson Debulet.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister and the team from the Department of Labour for the APP and budget. My first question, Chair, would relate to slide 48. The Honourable Makwembu has made the reference to that. But my question is, why only 100 people with disabilities? Am I hearing you properly? But further building on that question, Chair, I also want to look at the financials report, where there is the heading transfers and subsidies. Now, in there, you are listing a number of beneficiaries receiving money from the department. And I have two questions there, Chair. Through you, Chair, can we request the department, because we are working with provinces and municipalities, whether it's possible for you to give us a breakdown of which organizations working with people with disabilities you have funded. And let me tell you where my question comes from. In my constituency, there is an area called Coronationville. The School for the Blind in Coronationville closed down. It employed over 100 people with disabilities. And you are talking at one level about creating opportunities for 100, but yeah, one institution has resulted in the loss of jobs for 100 people with disabilities. The second example that I just wanted to use there, Chair, is that also there is an NPO in the same area, Coordination Board, helping a broad range of people with disabilities, particularly people with mental disabilities. Talking to the leadership at that center, they are partnering with a company, and the company has given them work to do. And I almost cried when this person shared with me that those people with disabilities, their productivity level is higher than the people working in the factory. So when we look at people with disabilities, we are not being paternalistic, but we are saying that these are people that have other abilities. And I'm therefore raising the question in the context of saying, how can we help those people that are differently abled so that they can also live life, and therefore asking through you, Chair, if we can get such a list. Who are the actual people? I know you have the National Council for the Blind, you have DEFSA and National Council for Physically Disabled, but if you could tell us, is it national office, are you paying it to the provinces? There are many other organizations helping people with disabilities in our constituencies, in our province, that we would also want to support. The second element of the question on people with disabilities, Chair, is to ask you how you are going about raising awareness about the support of the Department of Labor to these sectors. Because our experience is one where we visited the SEE in Port Elizabeth, they did not know how to approach. And once we have helped open that door for them, you know how good the center in Port Elizabeth is doing now. But we needed some intervention from our side, and we believe that there is good work. Can you tell us whether you have a media campaign? What strategies are you using to engage with them in this financial year that is before us now? That's my first question, Chair. My second one relates to slide 21. In slide 21, you are talking about labor policy and industrial relations, and then talking about taxi and hospitality workers. Now, coming from Hotel, it pains one when one sees the violence, particularly between Uber taxis and the other public taxis, not our minibuses, the smaller cars, they call them MBAs. We can't have our people dying like that. Now, I've raised it with our MEC in the province to say, are we ready, because of the fourth industrial revolution, with a strategy through which we are going to help those of our people who are operating as Uber taxis? Do we have legislation at least being developed to also look at that category of workers? The B part of that question, Chair, is that the Department of Tourism in the PPP last week told us about their concentration on SMMEs and guest houses. Now, we frequent guest houses as members of the NCOP, and we just like to hear from you whether there is a plan in place as well to protect the workers in these guest houses. The other day, when we did oversight in Bloemfontein, we were in Zastro, and we had the most excellent service from people serving in those guest houses, from the owner, the manager, to the people working there. Now, we don't want to get involved when we do this oversight by asking the worker, how are you being treated yet? Do you have a plan to deal with that category of workers? Chair, my next question is related to some of the points that come from the portfolio committee, where you are saying that very often service is hampered by poor infrastructure, by your network failures, particularly on PES, by your network failures, by reliability. Now, we know that many of the young people that have registered with you are saying, but we don't hear that from the Department of Labor. Mm-hmm. Now, the explanation is that it's because of the reliability of your system. Now, when I look at your budget, I see you have approximately 20 million for that particular budget line. Can you tell us whether that problem has now been captured, that we're not going to have problems with IT in the Department of Labor anymore? My next point, Chair, is on interdepartmental cooperation, not intergovernment. The Department of Higher Education and Training is looking at cooperating with the Department of Labor in terms of skills development, again, within the context of looking at new skills that particularly our young people are requiring. I haven't heard you in this presentation mentioning it. Now, it could be detailed, but could you just indicate to us whether there are plans from the department to cooperate with other departments of government? And if you could list us just three, you don't need to give us all of that. But particularly my interest is here with the Department of Higher Education. Chair, my next question is related to the labor inspectors. We know that the Department of Labor do not have sufficient budget to deal with labor inspectors. Do you have a way in which you will be effective in the inspection based on the present appropriations? Because we can't have a situation where not effective inspection is being done. My final question, Chair, would just be to talk about the vacant posts within the department. Can you give us an indication, or can you give us an assurance as to when the vacant posts will in fact be filled? If not, give us a reason why. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by welcoming the presentation. I would only two questions. My first question, what measures does the department have in place to make sure that system A concludes labor disputes timely and restore labor peace? The second question, on the work of the labor court and labor appeal court, what oversight role does the department play to ensure that we reduce employee conflict? The prolonged disputes are not persistent and have a tendency of negatively affecting labor productivity and economic growth in the country. Thank you.
Can we take other hands, because we're not going to have a second round.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm just going to mention very briefly, I want to comment on three issues, two very briefly, and the one is on EPWP. I trust that the minimum wage will also be, the EPWP will also, they will receive the minimum wage as well. And once this is done, I trust that the department will start looking at taking in people by EPWP and into the formal sector and give them the benefits of formal employment. The other issue is the one of contact labor. I haven't heard very much spoken about it, but is the department looking at scrapping contact labor in the years to come? Those are the two brief issues I want to talk about. But the third one is about the minimum wage. Now, we heard what the minister had to say about minimum wage, and yes, we understand this, but it's not so much about the fact that minimum wage needs to be introduced ASAP. It is long overdue. It is something that is affecting the lives of people on a daily basis. But we should not look at the issue of a minimum wage in isolation. The whole purpose, and we should not, we should keep the broader picture in mind all the time. The whole purpose of a minimum wage is not so much to go to the employer and say to the employer, listen, you need to give your staff a greater salary. It's not about that. We should see it in the broader picture that it is. The whole purpose of a minimum wage is to ensure that the majority of our people in this country will begin to share more equitably in what is the cake that is our gross domestic product. What we have at the moment in this country is a gross discrepancy on how much of that cake is being shared by the people that are in the working population.
by those that are in employment. So when we consider a minimum wage, which we should also look at minimum wage against the background of the rest of the issues that need to be brought to the table to ensure that the people of this country will begin to share more equitably in the cake that is our gross domestic product. And I would like to hear comment from the department, and especially, and perhaps the Honourable Deputy Minister will give us an idea as to whether the executive is keeping this picture in mind, whereas we consider not only minimum wage, but we need to introduce other issues. And I would like to hear from the Deputy Minister what other issues are being considered to ensure that we do achieve this goal.
On the blue chair, thank you. Okay. Another member is looking at me because you see the difference that when the legislation comes from the executive and then it goes to NEDLAC and then comes to Parliament. Once it comes to Parliament, it's no longer in the hands of the executive. Whatever you want to do with that legislation, it is in your power, Honorable Fault. So I'm saying with regard to the minimum wage, the Deputy Minister may or may not respond to that. But the point I'm making is that the minimum wage now is here in Parliament. It's up to Parliament to decide and do whatever it wants to do about it. Whatever proposal you have, you are free to raise those. There is the opportunity to deliberate on the issue that has to do with that particular bill. So I just wanted to raise that point because I also said the same thing with regard to ARTO when we met with the Department of Transport. Honorable Mapwe was asked a question with regard to ARTO, and I said it's out of the hands of the Department of Transport, a matter that Parliament is dealing with now. I don't know if I'll give it to you guys, the resident. Following the protocol that the leader of delegation is setting up. So he's the one who has been instructed the administration to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson and Mr. Simmons. I have got with me duties that are responsible for defining the project. I would ask Ms. Nula to respond. On matters that are inspection and enforcement related. There are a number of issues that are directed at Ms. on labor policy in Zimbabwe. And there were issues that led to administration GDG, but possibly also on the country. And there were issues that led
your point around the capacity of the inspectorate is not unfounded. It is the truth that we do not have enough capacity. As a matter of fact, we've got about 1,650 inspectors, including vacancies. And of those, just under 1,200 are dedicated to enforcing basic conditions of employment. So by any stretch of the imagination, that is really a drop in the ocean. Because you're looking at 1,650 against an EAP of about 15 million in the country. So your questions were very specific in terms of given the challenge, what is it that you're doing? I'm just going to outline very briefly what is it that you're doing, because you cannot continue to lament the audience. The IES strategy is three-pronged. There's an element that talks to advocates, there's an element that talks to inspection, as well as enforcement. We make it clear when we engage at any level that we are willing to work with employers that are willing to comply. So the advocacy part comes in quite handy. And advocacy in this instance is directed both at employers as well as employees. So that in the space of the labor market, the key labor market players, first of all, should know their rights and as well as their obligations. And we also have emphasized that the issue of enforcement is not the business of the Department of Labor alone. It is the three-tier strategy. It takes into consideration the fact that social partners have got a stake to play. We always refer to the spirit in which our labor laws are put together. If you can neglect the constituencies that are represented there, and that when it comes to implementation, the same energy, the same zeal that is directed into putting the laws together should also be directed towards making sure that there's compliance. And this is not necessarily going to absorb us as the administration to do the public service scheme. So that's the one area, making sure that, like for instance, when you go to the shop steward level, you find that some employees are not aware of their rights, and that's where organized labor should have a role to play. You look at unionization rates, if the statistics and the trends that are in the labor market are anything to go by, the unionization rate is said to be dwindling, and that presents a challenge in the labor market space. Because you need employees that are also informed, that are also going to be able to stand for their own rights. Our planning is very conscientious. It's based on historical trends. It's based on administrative data, and it's also based on the data that we generate as a department. And I think it will touch part of what the question is raised, but how do we plan, how do we direct the minimal resources that we have. We have what we call problematic areas, as well as high-risk areas, where we direct the majority of our resources. And obviously, it will differ from one problem to the other. But broadly, in problematic areas, we noticed that agriculture is quite problematic. Wholesale and retail is also equally problematic, as well as security. So you see that when what is presented is really an aggregated version, but when you go into a deep aggregated version, you see the number of inspections that they are proportionally divided to precisely target areas that are problematic. And problematic areas are linked to PCEA, and then we've got high-risk areas that are linked to OHS, and there you find construction as well as industry. For the year in question and the plan that we're presenting, we've directed 175,000 inspections to PCEA, because that's where you find the chunk of our vulnerable workforce. And we also have taken a very conscious decision to strengthen our enforcement arm, because we had been criticized in the past, and I think justifiably so, that it seems to be very strong in inspections, but when it comes to enforcement, the way we do things leaves a lot to be desired. So in the past financial year and the year prior to that, we have built the statutory services capacity of the branch to make sure that those employers that are perpetually contravening the laws are really dealt with. And that's what we've done in terms of strengthening the capacity of the law, and also working in the role players, with the role players in the space. The other thing that we've done is that grant sometimes we don't have a number of inspectors, but those that we have should really be productive, and their work should be qualitative work. So in that area, we have upped our game when it comes to training and capacity building, so that those that are there do work of quality and in an efficient way, because that also access. So as inspectors continue to gather experience, as they continue to be trained, they become efficient in the way they do things, and it helps us to be able to be efficient. The last thing that I want to talk to in this area is that internally, we work very closely with the Compensation Fund as well as the Unemployment Insurance Fund. In the past, our systems were quite disintegrated. Now we're building that integration. I'll give you an example. So that when we plan our inspections, for instance, we look at the unemployment insurance data and say which are the employers that seem to be not declaring as they should, given the trends in the past. When we go to CF, we look at which companies are claiming more, and that would say that there's likely to be more incidents and more contraventions, and then direct our resources in that regard. And also, when it comes to the resources of the inspectorate itself, I mean, we've taken decisions such as the OHS inspectors need to be carried 100% by the compensation fund, because the work that they do really respond to issues around SCF. So those are some of the things that we have done. I think Honourable Mokwe, let's also go to the question that you raised around the hospitality sector. They are part of the BCA, and we, like I mentioned, that our targets around them are responding directly to some of the problems.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Let me check.
Maybe whether we talk about the question relating to the bus drive, the bus driver might see that they're not paid for the violation of the CCA.
Normally, how we work is that in instances where complaints are brought to our attention, we address them. So the issues of night shift and the issues that were raised by the striking bus drivers, if they were brought to our attention, we would have addressed it. So because that's how we work. Our inspections are both reactive and proactive. So I may not be specifically be able to give a response in relation to that group of drivers that are striking. But we have reactive inspections as well as proactive inspections. Proactive, we plan them in line with the problematic areas that you pick up. Reactive, those are generated by complaints that get reported to our offices. There is no complaint that gets reported to our offices that doesn't get attention.
And the police certificate too, given that now they were, raised publicly, after the conclusion of those negotiations in the past, Department of Labor was being blamed. I don't know if you've done anything or waiting them for them to provide you with the details of that. Because I also watched it on TV when the union concluded the argument on which they were saying some of the issues would be referred to the TAFTA. But in particular, these two, they blamed the Department of Labor. The issue of the shift allowance and the double okay. After him, the Flungo one also to have, I think it's teaching
legislation that is, I can say that we try to avoid problematic areas as well as high risk. Then other problematic areas, we targeting wholesale and retail. I don't have the statistics in terms of the problem, but I can provide the information later.
Thank you,
Chair. Let me deal with the issue around the fund strikes and perhaps some context in relationship to the industry. You will recall that the industry has a bargaining council. A bargaining council that sets on conditions and agree on wages and conditions of employment, etc. Dispute resolution system. The issues that the bargaining council are raised, have been raised in terms of dual drivers, in terms of nexus allowances, these are conditions that the bargaining council reached agreement on by the two social partners that sit in the bargaining council. Therefore, the Department of Labor would not necessarily have a role to play with as an issue of self-regulation that we need to. So the bargaining council has its own dispute resolution mechanism, and they need to deal with the issues within the bargaining council, especially in terms of the issues that they have agreement on. And therefore, the department, by nature of the manner in which we operate in terms of bargaining councils, would not necessarily have a view of what the non-compliance within the bargaining council by itself. But we would probably look at it in the context of the agreement that they table and have a look at it. But again, even if you look at it, there's nothing that the Department of Labor can do because the parties are representative in the bargaining council and they reach agreement on conditions of employment as well as the remuneration.
You do not have a role then in the implementation. Is that what you say?
Yes.
Okay. So you don't have inspectors. The parent council has its own inspector.
Yes.
But you were not that strong in communicating that. After that attempt, your communication department was not that
So that deals with the issue. The second issue is raised by Honorable Makuwe in relationship to the fourth industrial revolution that I wanted to address. So we deal with this in a number of ways, Honorable Member. One is the discussion that we have at international level so that we understand what the implications of the fourth industrial revolution is. It's not only about mechanization, it's not only about the but it's about how the nature of work changes as a result thereof. We've had a discussion with a German country in relationship, Germany in relationship to what they are doing in terms of the fourth industrial revolution, so that we have an understanding of how it impacts us. We need to have an understanding of how it impacts us on a broader level, for example, in the agricultural sector, as an example. The manner in which they work has changed tremendously. The combined harvests that you see don't even drive any longer. The sprinkler system that they use, irrigation system that they use in the agricultural sector, the farmer sends an SMS to the control unit. So we have to look at this and see how it impacts on South African jobs in South Africa. What are the jobs that are going to be impacted in South Africa? Some research has indicated that maybe doctors will not be needed. Because robots have a 99% better way in terms of understanding what is wrong than doctors. So you've got to have a broader sense before you start regulating the industry in that way. So we're having a debate around that. We're having a debate across the whole spectrum of issues in relationship to the fourth industrial revolution. So that when we respond to it, we respond adequately to the working conditions, to the effect of employment in the fourth industrial revolution. How do we provide protection for those workers? Do we need the union that we do, as we currently do? Because the number of workers are declining. So do we still have the same bargaining arrangement that we need to have? So there's a broader context that we need to apply and think through when we're the post-industrial revolution. In terms of the CCMA case, I may go to the other question. The CCMA is a 97% rate in finalizing cases before the due date of finalization. So the problem is not the CCMA that dispute resolution takes over too long. There will be some that take over too long. But at the 97% rate, there's some degree of efficiency that we get from the CCMA and significant efficiency at that. We don't have oversight over the labor court or the labor field court, because one thing that the labor court the judges have said is that they don't want us to interfere with the work that they do. Their decisions are their decisions. We as the department have put down the legislative framework. And they will have to apply the legislative framework in terms of how they apply their minds to the matter. We do always assist on the panel that appoint judges, so we are represented in those panels so that we can have those efficiencies. And with respect to the minimum wage, Chair, if I may, Honourable Powder, ask this question. We agree totally with the Honourable Member that there's a broader context that you have to look at in the introduction of the minimum wage. Therefore, some of the agreements that we've reached at NEDLAC actually address these things. We talked about how do you get to the social security reform that you require in order to address the backlog that would happen. How do you address the issue around the health care in terms of, so that when you link these to with each other, you have a better link in terms of what are the mechanism that you put in place in order to... What are the mechanisms that you put in place in order to assist small businesses that could not cannot afford the national minimum wage to the extent that you can? We were talking about the employment tax incentive. What are the other mechanisms of countries? And there's still continued discussion around these issues around the national minimum wage. We agree totally with the notion that we have to introduce the minimum wage as a matter of urgency. However, we are hamstrung, as the Chair has indicated, that it is now outside of our control, is now in the parliamentary process. The EPWP, as a function of the national minimum wage, is included in the national minimum wage, and it will be ratcheted up as the national minimum wage is amended. Ratcheted up at the same levels and same percentage levels that you have. There is a broader discussion, I think, that NEDLAC also needs to have, and NEDLAC is the one of the agreements that we have is NEDLAC needs to do a research report in terms of what are the implications of this. If the fiscus has the money, we don't have a problem of setting the EPWP at 20 rand an hour. But it is important that we recognize the poverty relief mechanism of the national the EPWP as opposed to formal employment in any case. But there is currently a sectoral determination, a ministerial determination that deals with conditions of employment in the EPWP sector. Chair, I think I've addressed all of those. Thank you. The context was, the department has dealt with issues around contract work sufficiently. There are amendments in the labor legislation, Labor Relations Act, that deals with the issue of contract work. In terms of the National Minimum Wage Act, they will be dealt with accordingly, because we've changed the definition of employee in the National Minimum Wage proposed legislation to worker, so that it covers all of these categories of workers that either to end up in cases. So we think as a slew of legislation that deals with the issue of contract work, that deals with the issue about labor brokers, that deals with the issue of remuneration, we in a coherent fashion try to deal with the issue of contract workers to that extent. Because we deal with it in different areas of the legislation across. We've dealt with the issue of equal pay for work of equal value, as well in the Employment Equity Act, and we hope that these measures that we put in place are not as restrictive as what we what, what, want to be so that we attract the investors that we need for the economic growth in the country. Okay, I think I've addressed those.
I was just saying that the outstanding response is on the SEE that I've asked, and also to the CEO around the challenges of audit findings.
Thank you, Oran. I'll start with the vacancy report on the vacancy post, question on the vacancy of the department. Currently, we're sitting at, if I exclude UIF and CF, we're sitting at 8%. Because the reason why I want to exclude them, when we are monitored by Tender, they normally get the posts that are funded by the CFAX. Therefore, the 8% relates to DON without UIFCS. And I think I need to just reassure the members that the department is indeed committed to making sure that the vacancies are filled. Unfortunately, it's a moving target. And as we fill posts, other posts are being, they become vacant. But we agreed with an expo that by the end of June, the posts that were vacant at a certain point, I think it was in April, when we had the guests from the broader expo meeting of the party, that they should not be vacant. At that point in time, we then agreed also that by June, or at any point in time, we should have posts that are vacant should not be older than 6 months. So that's the tolerance level. And the standard operating procedures also talk to that. The other question was on the corruption in the department and fraud cases are not being investigated. I don't have the full details as to which cases are not investigated and which cases of misconduct are not concluded. I will provide that information later in writing, if I'm allowed to. Okay. And then the other one on the lead management, and the CFO will touch on the contract management. But on lead management, what we've done is we had committed that by the beginning of this year, in April, we're going to implement the e-lead management. We've actually gone online, started with the pilot project at head office. It's working very well. We are now going to, I think the CFO will also outline on that because he's the one who's taking the e-lead management project. We will then cascade it down to the provinces at a later stage. There was also a question on the ICT system, the network failure. We do, I have to acknowledge that we do have, we had a rough time in terms of the ICT system, but we've made it a priority. We've got a project called the data center migration, which is going to assist in ensuring that our capacity to handle, the main reason why we could not be fast enough in terms of the system accessibility was the size and the capacity of our data center. Now we're going to have a hosted solution outside the department, which we are busy with at the moment. We are anticipating that by August 2018, we'll be doing the data migration from where we're currently hosting the data to the hosted environment, which will then impact on the effectiveness of the accessibility, effectiveness of the system and the accessibility of the system. I think I covered the CFO will then cover all the contract management and extensive service.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. I intended to combine the questions related to the Eastern Cape and the question that relates to other entities of a similar kind employing persons with disabilities. I must preface the answer with the following two members. As a matter of fact, provinces in the Republic are not supporting the factor. But a firm statement that indicates the current situation with relation to us creating employment opportunities for persons with disabilities. We're not getting enough support from provinces. Hence, you're getting the figures cumulative as they were in relation to the number of persons targeted for employment in the system, precisely because provinces are not providing support to the factors. With regards to the Eastern Cape, I can't provide you with the exact numbers, but I can provide you with the figures. Again, it has got to do with the fact that in spite of the fact that almost about 2 years ago, a change from the sheltered employment factors to supported employment enterprises, the main change in the launch took place in the Eastern Cape, in the presence of senior leadership of the province. Commitments that provinces are making from the shared government are not translated into direct order into the attitude. The space in the federal to create more opportunities for persons with disabilities, if government departments were to, in provinces in particular, were to place orders on the factory, we predominantly are relying on national government departments. And problems are not coming to the party. A related question with regards to other institutions of persons with disabilities. We have been visiting in the past financial year, and we can provide members a breakdown of visits undertaken throughout the Republic to special schools. Because we also view that special schools in all of the provinces employing persons with disabilities. Who are literally revolving in those special schools because they cannot find employment opportunities anywhere else, constitute a database for our recruitment effort so that when we look for new employees in the factory, we use the database created from the special schools. We've almost visited throughout the Republic about 98% of special schools. We could provide members of that database. That indicates the level of collaboration that we have as the FTE with special schools. That includes all of the provinces, and including your province, honorable member, which is Protag. A related question, the factories provide, the factories are involved, honorable member, in productive work. We're not workshops. We're doing direct production activities in the factory. The manufacturing of school furniture, but over and above that, the manufacturing of office quality office furniture. Prices are reasonably in the factory precisely because National Treasury determines the prices with regards to the products that are sent out in the open labor market. Marketing and the knowledge of the entities. The business development unit that exists in the factory whose responsibility is to market the factories. So there's an effort to market the factories in all of the provinces, but as a matter of fact, provinces are not coming to the party to support this most vulnerable sector of our population, persons with disabilities. Hence, you see the numbers. Hence, with regards to the Eastern Cape, in particular, the numbers in relation to those that would be absorbed in the factory, even though we have the exact figure, would be a small portion of what is detained in there, precisely because provinces are not coming to the party to support persons with disabilities. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
I will start with the status of labor centers in Limpopo. Particularly, I will deal with the two extremes. Cases that we have in the department. The other one.
Okay.
My interest was in my song.
So under your point, what would happen? Maybe it may not be now. You know, I know CCMA, for example, they score their from that this month, or they score their this particular from number one, number two. There is something similar to that. It may not be today, but it would be that kind of thing. But also consistent management for those aspects, including the point that Tower was raising, that no cooperation from processes with regard to you can then respond to the direct one.
With regard to, I think, the two, we had an issue of accommodation. In Sokoyando, we identified that there is a building that belonged to UIF, which they inherited from the Department of Manpower. And as well, where the investment of the two funds are in the hands of the PIC, we are then negotiating with the PIC to then renovate that building. And I'm confident that in the next 6 months, the software and the office would be occupying that building. With regard to Sanin, the office that we occupied was condemned by our own inspectors. As a result, we ended up being accommodated by the municipality in their municipal hall, in their town hall, where the DPW has awarded the contract to a landlord, and he has promised that will finish the customer installations within 6 weeks. So I'm confident that in the next 2 months we will then occupy our new offices in Sanin. Those are the two extreme cases with regard to Limpopo, with regard to the labor centers. Challenges that I've mentioned, I think they were from our audit report 2016-17, of which 2017-18, we had our action plan with regard to contract management. The challenge was that because we have a decentralized environment, some of the documents could not be produced for auditing. Some of the documents in terms of contracts could not be produced for auditing. I have produced a new procedure manual, and I'm confident that in the 2017-18, bearing fruit. AG is out in the provinces auditing for the year under review, and this issue of contract management is no longer coming sharply as it did in the prior year. With the issue of leave management, I think the member is correct. We have looked into an electronic leave management system. We started late in terms of the implementation of the system. We started late, somewhere around November, December, and the full implementation, the full rollout has already commenced. Head office, it's a full rollout at the head office. Head office is now using the e-leaf system. We have rolled it out in Free State, Northern Cape. We had some challenges in terms of rolling it out at Northwest because of the strikes or the political unrest in there. We are now, this week, we are in Limpopo rolling it out. I think the provinces that are left will be Mpumalanga, KZN, Eastern Cape, and Western Cape. We have set ourselves a due date of by end of all leave applications in the Department of Labor will be electronic, precisely to deal with the issue of the decentralized environment that we are working on. I think it covers the issues that I have to deal with from finance.
Thank you, honorable members. There were questions around what took long to finalize the quota. That was mainly due to the consultation process, both within and at NEDLEC. However, we must realize
However, I must also point to the honourable member that the amendment to the COI will not have jurisdiction in the mining sector, because that the safety in the mine is regulated by the Mining Occupational Health and Safety Act, which falls under the MINRAF and energy. This one covers all workers except mining. How effective is our labor centers and the monitoring system? Yes, Honorable Chairperson, we do have a system that you mentioned. On all the performances of the department, we do rank the different offices, and we do convene meetings with the regional managers or deputy directors responsible for our labor centers to look at the performance, the infrastructure, and all this, and have that information readily available. And consequential management does apply in those offices that are not performing. And in fact, the DG has actually, in the last quarter, moved a number of DGs in Soweto, in Boxback, and so on, because of progress they can perform. The other one, on the ICT one, just to also add that, yes, indeed, that is whilst there are moves around the infrastructure at the department, others were due to external things that we don't have control over, like cable theft and so on. But we are moving to Wi-Fi so that we minimize disruption on the self-service stations that we're introducing in our computer network, and that people are able to receive services using the satellite, and we've issued a number of our staff with 3G cards so that they can connect, especially in visiting phones, on laptops, and end-user devices. I'm sure you will notice a number of inspectors are now having new gadgets that allows them to connect to the department without having to go via fixed network. Briefly on the question around work, just to add on what Mr. Nondwangu said, is that we are currently working with other departments such as private industry, the infrastructure department at the cluster level, where strategies like IFAP, the ocean economy, all those strategies are being discussed with the intention of actually creating employment using initiatives and so on in the years of the president. We are a key player in that, because all these initiatives are seen as part of government collective initiatives to increase employment. Our labor education program through the unemployment insurance fund and the public insurance are also central in terms of all the programs. On the example of departments that work with as part of intergovernmental relations, we are certainly part of that. We work with the Department of Higher Education. We have staff members at high levels that are serving on the National Skills Authority, the Higher Education Quality Council. We also have a task team that is looking at counseling that we are part of. We work also with the DGI, the Department of Higher Education, around corporate payments, cooperatives, and the Department of Home Affairs around the whole question of inter-cross-border migration management, on the question of access or what payments for those sections where we don't have skills. And the challenge that we are dealing with now has mainly to do with the lower level skills that we have in abundance, but we also have a lot of both documented and in some cases documented foreign nationals who may have come in and are having collectively with social development, our intention is to make sure that these factories become much more productive, so they get more work, so that they can increase their revenue, and that in the process remove people from the social grant.
But I think it will help the department a lot if the select committee were to engage the other department that has something to do with the work that we do, so that we are able to achieve some of what we need to. Like, for instance, on the question of the cooperation that we need at the provincial level and also with other departments with regard to supported employment and stuff like that. We have to ask them how much work are they giving to those factories in order to ensure that they are paid viable and that they are in a position to absorb more such people having disabilities to be part of this. But the question of inspecting and enforcement, I think again here the NetTech social partner should go beyond discussing policy and legislation and having it brought to Parliament at the end of it. They must ensure that they are part and parcel of the employment effort, I mean enforcement effort and implementation effort rather of the laws that you agree on. The minister before she left told me that there has been an agreement reached at NetTech that organized business and organized labor are going to be part and parcel of effort that we're embarking upon, so that they ensure that their own members do their part, ensuring that the laws that we pass have meaning in the life of the people concerned. The fourth industrial revolution is obviously upon us, and this is beginning, it has long begun in any event, to destroy jobs. And I think the only thing we can do as a nation is to try and master. Make sure that the children in school, the high school, universities, colleges are able to deal with internet and all of those kinds of things, so that at least they are able to use them and control them, rather than the chains of that of the book. That's one way of ensuring them that there is some employment, but otherwise, it is there, and it is causing havoc. Simple example given by the field here that you don't have to have a number of workers on the field to do things that you can produce, and that is the place from your house, and then water comes out. There are many other examples that you cannot remember and have. Question of labor programs or contractors, I think that too has been addressed, and the point that the principle that we adopted in the Development Inspection Committee made is that every worker must enjoy the rights that other workers enjoy, regardless of who has facilitated your getting a job. It should not depend on whether you got the job directly, that you are able to enjoy the rights that you have. And even that the minimum wage is good at paying, we're talking about workers, not just employees, to ensure that nobody disadvantaged because of the circumstances that led to him getting placed in a job. On the question of vacant posts, we are, as the ministry, very much concerned about this. As you know, we have a database of people who are overwhelmed, and we believe that we should be doing better than we are doing, because those millions of people that are in our database, surely a number of them do have the qualifications that are required for the department of people and so on. That's why in the portfolio committee, the National Assembly lately, recently decided that on a quarterly basis, the department is going to report progress on the filling of the building office.
We actually other department also give us mandate to ask other departments for the some of the work that they deal with and they are not getting cooperation from department. Let me ask this question on behalf of the Department of Small Business Development. The question that we promised that we will be asking to each and every department that comes before us. What is the 30-day payment period? Whether you are meeting that deadline. The other issue that the same month asks each and every department is the 30% set aside for small business. So if you could respond to that to those. We will also take up the issue that Dylan is asking us to do with also other departments, including the Department for Small Businesses. So we will play that role of assisting departments by asking departments whether how they are cooperating on the work that is done by other departments. The third point that we just want to say, the additional information that is required by members, if it could be given to us in 7 days from now. The fourth issue that because of the nature of the committee, this committee deals with six departments and 31 entities. And therefore, we are unable to have to call you to come and report on your quarterly report. But what we want to request is you come before portfolio committee to report, but the document that you send to the portfolio committee, you must also send to the select committee, even if we're not going to call you to engage with you. We'll just note what is that. But when we call you for the annual report, would have been also taken through the quarterly report, and it would make it easier for us to engage with the annual report. Yeah, but just before you respond on the two, the 30-day period, we want to first adopt the report. We must make sure that we have enough numbers, because I see someone just standing up without even indicating to me the living. So I just want to first read the resolution members and then ask for the member of the senator for the adoption of this resolution. The Select Committee on Economic and Business Development, having considered Budget Vote 18, Labour Strategic Plan, Annual Performance Plan, and Budget for 2018-2019 of the Department of Labour, reports that it has concluded its deliberation thereon. Report to be considered. Can we have a move and a second? Honourable Makuwe, seconded by Honourable Chetu. Thank you. And this will then be 86 minutes. Back to you, this CFO. Sorry, both to you.
Thanks. On the issue of payment within 30 days, I am of the view that as a department we are dealing with the issue. On the year under review, in terms of our report on the payment within 30 days, we are sitting around 99.98%. The reason for probably not being 100% were due to the rejection of some of our accounts, which I take it as a small number. And we are reporting on this on a monthly basis to National Treasury. The support of small businesses. I think from where I am, I think we need to fine-tune this. Because from the procurement database, they define the SMME, which is the turnover below 30 million. If we were to report on the 30% support of small business, I think we need to fine-tune. careful how we define small projects. Is the SMMP definition of 30 million sufficient? And then also on the treasury side on that database, to be then able to tag those suppliers so that when I have to report, I just have to look at the suppliers that we have. The other second point that we also need to deal with, probably we might also have to engage the interested department, the small businesses, is the issue of big contracts, like the RC15 on the mobility that was signed with Vodacom. In that contract, there is also a small business, there's also an SME component in it. So when we pay Vodacom, there's also some subcontracting that Vodacom was required to do. So how then do I report those? Because it's also included in the big amount that I pay Vodacom. So there are just some small issues that we need to find food for us to be able to report appropriately on the data.
Could form part of the quarterly report that will be submitted. Honourable members, I think we've come to the conclusion of the meeting. We were supposed to deal with the minutes. Now we have three sets of minutes, but fortunately, Honourable Makuwe has given us tomorrow's Wednesday to continue with the APP for Department of Public Works. So we will start with the adoption of minutes tomorrow, the three set of minutes tomorrow.
Just a point of correction, sir. It was the committee that gave it to us.
Oh, okay. Point taken. Yeah, so we start with those three sets of minutes tomorrow. That's why I'm stopping the Honorable Ted, because he's been part of the three meetings. Some of the members were not necessarily part of all the treaties. We might have a problem with the adoption of the minutes. So we'll start with them tomorrow, Honorable Martin. I must also announce that we received, after we dealt with the apologies, the written apologies from Honorable and Kelly. So that's what to that day also to be recorded. Thank you very much. For coming to the committee and also to the team. Thank you very much, honorable member. We're meeting again tomorrow at 10. The venue is 314. Meeting at 10. Thank you.
Thank you. I love it.